Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Our cover story this week is part of the Project Life series, A Quest for Better Vision. Triangle providers deploy advanced tools in the fight against loss of sight. Before the cover story, we'll read the biz section and the reporter pages. The biz section is written by managing editor Dane Huffman. His main story this week, Artist Collective to End in Raleigh. The City Market Spot has highlighted an established group of local artists. A hub that's been home to some of Raleigh's best-known artists will close this month. Sculptor Paris Alexander launched the City Market Artist Collective 5 years ago, bringing in established art space artists such as Eric McRae and Judy Crane. The collective at 300 Blake Street has added to the hip urban feel of the city with its fun vibe in the Raleigh City Market. Alexander insisted that artists there are 10 there now, in addition to him, agreed to be in the location a certain amount of time. Artists are not the most organized group of folks, so I went into it with that in mind. If you want to be a part of this, this is what you have to do, he said. But after 5 years, Alexander said he's ready for a new chapter. I had been toying with it for the last year or so, he said, and it just took a lot of time, and most of my income is coming from my commissions. Alexander is in demand as his modern take on classical sculpture appeals to institutions such as hospitals and universities. He said the collective is closing December 24th on a high note, getting more than 500 visitors on first Fridays and roughly that many through a week. I could have kept it all going, he said, but the timing just sort of felt right. Another title for the UNC women despite coach retiring. No Anson Dorrance, no problem for the women's soccer team at UNC Chapel Hill. The Tar Heels won their 23rd national title December 9th, defeating ACC rival Wake Forest University 1-0. UNC has dominated women's soccer, but this marked its first title in 12 years. This season also marked the first without Dorrance, who led the program for 34 years and won 22 NCAA championships. Interim coach Damon Nahas was informed before the final game that he would be the full-time coach. Housing market could pick up in the next year. After a relatively cool period in 2023 and 2024, the housing market in the Raleigh area could be ready to pop again in 2025. Home prices in the area are forecast to jump 9% year over year, according to Realtor.com's 2025 outlook. That would be a substantial surge, considering what the local market has seen in the past couple of years. In November, the median sales price for a single-family home in Wake County was around $540,000, up less than 2% from the same month in 2023, according to Dorify MLS, which was formerly Triangle MLS. Biscuitville continues its expansion. When it comes to beloved brands with North Carolina roots, Biscuitville Fresh Southern is right up there with Krispy Kreme, Texas Pete, and Pepsi Cola. And 2024 was a year of expansion for the Greensboro-based brand. The company opened 4 new restaurants in North Carolina this year in New Bern, Flowers Plantation in Clayton, Lenore, and Kinston. The restaurant chain opened another 4 restaurants in South Carolina as well. Biscuitville now operates 84 restaurants in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia. Dick's Conservancy adds former Raleigh leader. The Dick's Park Conservancy added a familiar name as its new executive director when former Raleigh city manager Ruffin Hall was named to the job. Hall was selected from a pool of 150 applicants and will begin January 1st. He served as the Raleigh City Manager from 2013 to 2020, coming to the city after roles in Charlotte. He led a management consulting firm after leaving the city. He succeeds Raleigh Mayor-elect Janet Cowell, who resigned from the Conservancy before the election. On a personal level, I'm deeply passionate about the opportunity to work with the Dix Park Conservancy, Hall said. I recall taking a tour of the park as a candidate for city manager in 2013 and feeling the enormous opportunity for Raleigh. It was one of the key reasons I decided to uproot my family and make a move from Charlotte to Raleigh. The Conservancy plays a key role in helping to raise funds for the park and its programs. The TBJ's economic development page is written by Lauren Onosorge. Her main story this week, New York tech firm moves HQ to Raleigh. A technology company out of upstate New York has moved its headquarters to Raleigh and it's hiring. Mark Shaw, founder of Stored Tech, said the decision to relocate the headquarters from New York was straightforward. At the end of the day, you don't put all your stocks in one company or one sector, he said. What I really wanted to figure out was how do we make sure we'd add diversity to our portfolio? The company acquired what was known as Sabre Business Solutions in 2017 and began to build out its triangle footprint, later buying Raleigh's NOAA IT. Stored Tech moved its local operations from Youngsville to Raleigh because it was easier to find talent, Shaw said. The headquarters moved to its newest office in Raleigh, located off Creedmoor Road behind the Creedmoor Crossings Retail Center, was made for the same reason. During COVID and after, New York lost a lot of its people, Shaw said. We had to make a decision. Where is the growth coming? The reality is it's in the Raleigh market. Five of its six newest clients are located in Raleigh. Today, around 40 employees are located in Raleigh, which is about half of the overall headcount. The new office is 6,000 square foot space. President David Andrade said the company has plenty of room to grow and that the Triangle's existing tech talent can deliver. He also said the company is eyeing more M&A opportunities to accelerate growth. It's important for us to be in a location that's more business friendly, Andrade said. Shaw had been running the day-to-day since the firm's founding in 2010 until recently when he hired Andrade. I scaled it up to about the $12 million, $13 million range, and David is pushing it, Shaw said. His goal is to push it to the $20 million to $30 million range in the near future. Shaw started the company 14 years ago to make the tech support process easier, where people can reach a live person quickly. German firm invests in Triangle Tech Company. A Triangle Tech Company has a new strategic investor, a German filter manufacturer. Nick Genty, CEO of AgEye, says it's not as much of a stretch as it appears on the onset. His Raleigh company, which deals in robotic automation and farm management software, made the connection to its new investor, Mann and Hummel, through Triangle entrepreneur Scott Wingo. AgEye executives and Mann and Hummel's venture team started having discussions in the spring of this year, and a partnership just made sense. If you think about the success factors with an indoor farm, obviously clean water, clean air, they're pretty critical to success, Genty said. And it all requires filtration, which is Mann and Hummel's focus. The manufacturer houses corporate employees in Raleigh and acquired North Carolina's Pamlico Air in 2022, further growing its footprint in the state. The $250,000 investment in AgEye by Mann and Hummel brings the firm's total capital raise to nearly $2.8 million. Their partnership, Genty said, includes a joint development agreement to collaborate on new technologies. Manufacturer picks Virginia over North Carolina. A New Jersey manufacturer considered and then rejected North Carolina for its first out-of-state operation, a $47 million 55-job project. Cambridge Paving Stones announced plans December 6th to construct a 150,000-square-foot facility in Virginia. Specifically, it picked Pennsylvania County near the border with North Carolina, an area that recently won a 2,000-job manufacturing plant over the Tar Heel State. Pennsylvania County includes the towns of Danville and Chatham. Cambridge's shortlist had also included South Carolina, New Jersey, and Massachusetts. The company is constructing a new plant in an industrial park in Pennsylvania County, about 2 hours away from Raleigh. It's not clear where in North Carolina the company was considering or how far along the state had made it in the site selection process. Officials with the NC Department of Commerce said it had not been working with the company, which would have been required for an incentives offer to have taken place. The company did not return a request for comment. Virginia Secretary of Commerce and Trade Karen Merrick credited the win to his region's robust infrastructure and dedicated workforce. Kaylee Thompson writes the real estate and development page. Tower snags first two office tenants. Downtown Raleigh's newest office building has signed its first office tenants. The developers behind 400H have signed two leases for office space in the 20-story tower on Hillsborough Street. The leases are the first office tenants for the mixed-use building as the market continues to face headwinds. Trammell Crow Company, High Street Residential, and HM Partners are the developers behind 400H. The retail space and residential units have leased up much more rapidly. Press Coffee, Cocktails and Crepes, and Brass Tap have both opened up on the ground floor, leaving just one retail space available. The 242 apartments are about 90% leased. The leases total 9,500 square feet, showing that smaller office leases are still the king of the office market since COVID. STV Inc., a professional services company for infrastructure services, signed a 6,500 square foot lease for the fourth floor. The company, headquartered in New York City, plans for a May move-in. A representative for STV said the company is relocating from its office at RDU Center Business Park in Morrisville, where it has about the same amount of space. Savills has been in its space at 408 since October. The global real estate advisory firm is in 3,000 square feet on the fourth floor. It signed the 7-year lease term in March. Tucker Shade, executive vice president for Savills, said the team currently is in 8 people and the new office has space for 12. Plus, the company's current hybrid work model will allow them to hire beyond what they have room for. Savills moved from its location in the PNC Plaza building because it was looking for the type of amenities and location that 400H offered. Shade said the space with an open layout, large conference rooms, kitchen and bar area, and outdoor balcony was a large reason for wanting to be at 400H. North Raleigh site of future apartments sells. An Atlanta developer spent more than $5 million on a North Raleigh site with an approved site plan. West Plan Investors acquired 10,800 Durant Road for $5.2 million from Williams Realty and Building Company, according to Wake County Deed Records. The 6.22 acres are near the Falls River Town Center. Williams Realty had started a site review process for a 176-unit apartment community. That plan changed to 200 units, and construction will start in mid-2025. This is West Plan's second project in the Triangle. We want to continue on that growth trajectory and grow our pipeline and presence here, said Patrick Foster, regional development partner for West Plan. Cary office buildings sell for big price. A set of office buildings in Cary is under new ownership in a deal that shows there's appetite in the commercial real estate market if the conditions are right. Easterly Government Properties recently paid $72.5 million for 3 office properties near Centrum at Crossroads Shopping Center in Cary, according to Wake County Deed Records. This is the company's first acquisition in the Triangle, and its 100th property overall. Easterly owns 9.8 million square feet of lease space in 26 states. The Cary buildings together are 97% leased, with the majority tenant and all of them being the Wake County Public School System, with lease terms extending to 2034. Jacobs Engineering occupies 31% of one of the buildings. The Cary buildings total 295,253 square feet and have a combined assessed value of approximately $50.8 million. Easterly owns federal, state, and local government adjacent properties. CEO Daryl Crate said Easterly had been looking at markets with high growth, strong employment, and high credit ratings. Easterly also focuses on sectors where most workers have returned to the office. Zach Ezone brings us the healthcare and life sciences page. The main story there this week, behind Amgen's $1 billion expansion in Holly Springs. One of the world's largest pharmaceutical companies is planning a major expansion in Wake County. Amgen is investing more than $1 billion to expand its operations in Holly Springs, where the company already has a facility under construction. With this additional investment, Amgen plans to add more than 300 jobs over the next 5 years. This investment will increase the company's footprint in Wake County as Amgen continues work on a $550 million drug substance manufacturing facility. Amgen broke ground on this facility in 2022, with the site projected to create 355 jobs. The company's investment in a second facility on its Holly Springs campus will double these job numbers, supporting an additional 370 positions between 2028 and 2032. This expansion reflects Amgen's ongoing commitment to innovation and the people who make it possible, Amgen CEO Robert Bradway said in a statement December 5th. North Carolina has been a strong partner, offering the skilled workforce and forward-looking business climate we need to bring vital medicines to patients around the world. Amgen plans to complete its additional $1.02 billion investment by the end of 2029 as the company tries to increase manufacturing capacity to support its long-term growth. Amgen estimates it will spend $1.3 billion on capital projects this year, including construction costs related to its Holly Springs facility and a new plant in Ohio that opened earlier this year. This is up from Amgen's original estimate of $1.1 billion. Amgen is in line to receive incentives from state and local agencies, including a job development investment grant. Amgen could receive nearly $5 million over 12 years as part of this grant agreement. Local incentives include about $11.5 million from the town of Holly Springs and about $28.7 million from Wake County, according to project documents. Amgen owns nearly 109 acres just south of Highway 1 on the northwest side of Holly Springs. The company's existing facility at the site totals about 225,000 square feet, according to Wake County property records. Biotech pursues hepatitis B treatment. A Durham biotechnology firm has reached a major milestone that could have broader implications for the industry. Toon Therapeutics has received approval for a clinical trial for its lead program intended to treat and potentially cure hepatitis B. Rather than gene editing, Toon is developing epigenetic treatments by controlling gene expression. We can basically tell the cell, I want you to ignore this particular DNA instruction that you were otherwise going to read, or I want you to read this instruction that you were otherwise going to ignore, Chief Scientific Officer Derek Jantz said. Most human diseases are caused by dysregulation of genes, meaning a gene may be intact or functional, but it is misfiring. The company gets its name from the idea of taking a cell that has become out of tune and restoring it back to a state of health, Jantz said. That is what the company is aiming to do with its first program called Toon 401. Toon has received approval to initiate a Phase 1B clinical study in New Zealand, which is expected to mark the first time that an epigenetic therapy has been evaluated in a clinical trial for the treatment of a common and infectious disease. Hepatitis B affects more than 250 million people globally. Durham firm treating blindness lands crucial partner. A small Durham biotechnology firm has found a partner to advance an investigational gene therapy that has helped restore the vision of some children in clinical trials. Atsena Therapeutics in November entered an exclusive licensing agreement with Nippon Shinyaku Company of Japan for a gene therapy that Atsena is developing as a treatment for a rare inherited retinal disease called Leber congenital amaurosis 1, or LCA1, that typically causes blindness in early childhood. The disease is caused by a mutation in a single gene, leading to a lack of vision. There is no approved treatments for LCA1, which often begins in children, but in early clinical trials, which included ages up to 76, Atsena's therapy has shown promise. Atsena is evaluating the therapy in a phase 1/2 clinical trial, the results of which were recently published in the medical journal The Lancet. There were 15 patients involved in the study, 9 of whom received the highest dose of the therapy. Those patients experienced clinically significant improvements in retinal sensitivity with no drug-related serious adverse events, according to study published results in The Lancet. Kate Tracy reports to us on retail and restaurants. South Point to add new sporting oasis. Dick's Sporting Goods is bringing its experiential store concept to the streets at South Point Shopping Mall in Durham. Dick's House of Sport is coming to the former Sears building at 6930 Fayetteville Road, according to Durham Public Records. In addition to the store, the sporting goods retailer is also looking to build a multi-use field in the parking lot near the store. Dick's is working with engineering firm Kimley Horn on plans to renovate the building into a sporting oasis. A timeline for opening the store is unclear. Transformco Properties of Illinois owns the former Sears building and the parking lot parcel, which totals 6.85 acres. Its total assessed value is $6.9 million per Durham County records. On its website, Transformco Properties says the 106,619-square-foot building has been leased to Dick's Sporting Goods. House of Sport locations are more experiential than Dick's traditional retail stores. They're decked out with a climbing wall, a golf pro shop, and a House of Cleats area featuring athletic footwear for various sports. The stores also feature a caged area with a virtual hit track simulator where customers can test gear and practice baseball, soccer, hockey, lacrosse, softball, and other sports. Select locations of House of Sport come with multi-sport outdoor fields, while stores in New York, Pennsylvania, and Minnesota even have ice skating rinks, per the company's website. The Durham location would be the company's second House of Sport in North Carolina, as it lists a location in Fayetteville on its website. House of Sport locations are now open in 12 states. Dick's has said it aims to have 20 House of Sport locations open by the end of this year. Earlier this year, CEO Lauren Hobart said the stores have been popular among retail landlords with their increased traffic, sales per square foot, and occupancy rates for the malls where they operate. And in related news, fitness chain secures first retail spot in Tower. A national fitness chain is stretching into Durham by nabbing the first retail space in a new 27-story downtown tower. Solid Core, an Arlington, Virginia-based fitness chain, has leased 2,369 square foot of space at The Novus, a new residential tower at 400 West Main Street in Durham. It's the first retail tenant at the tower, and it plans to open during the first quarter of next year. Solid Core opened its first studio in the Triangle earlier this year at the Raleigh Iron Works. At a Solid Core class, attendees can expect a reformer workout similar to Pilates, involving strength training and slow movements. Solid Core currently has four locations in Charlotte, and the fitness company has studios in 26 states. Cary is to get a bigger Chick-fil-A at Crossroads. Demolition and a rebuild is on the menu for one of Chick-fil-A's locations in Cary. In order to meet increased demand, the Atlanta restaurant chain has filed plans with the town of Cary to demolish a 32-year-old restaurant at 1815 Walnut Street and replace it with a larger one in the same spot. The restaurant sits on a 1.4-acre lot in heavily trafficked area near the Crossroads Plaza Shopping Center. It's sandwiched between an Olive Garden and an AutoZone store, which has replaced the former Pier 1 Imports. Plans indicate the new Chick-fil-A would be 5,335 square feet and include 88 seats for customers. The drive-thru would have two lanes around three sides of the building that would fit approximately 40 vehicles at any given time per site plans. The project is necessary to meet the increasing needs, both customer and personnel, of the existing business, according to the plans. A timeline for the project was not disclosed. Representatives from Chick-fil-A did not immediately respond to an inquiry. And the Triangle Town Center has a new owner. An embattled mall in Raleigh is under new ownership. Summit Properties USA announced recently it had acquired the Triangle Town Center, located at 5959 Triangle Town Boulevard in Raleigh, as part of a larger acquisition of malls around the country. Summit Properties USA, a subsidiary of the UK-based Summit Properties LTD, said it had paid $700 million for shopping centers across the country, including the Triangle Town Center, and now lists the Raleigh Mall on its website. The series of mall acquisitions took place over several quarters. It's unclear how much Summit Properties paid for the mall, as Wake County has not yet recorded a deed for the transaction. Triangle Town Center opened in 2002. In September, Summit Chief Operating Officer Dennis Nizaj filed preliminary subdivision plans for the property with the City of Raleigh. The mall last sold in 2021 to Cohan Retail Investment Group out of Great Neck, New York. Cohan purchased the Triangle Town Center for $33.25 million, a fraction of the $174 million it sold for in 2016, according to previous reporting, following years of financial distress. Its total assessed value is $70.9 million per Wake County records. Ben Tobin brings us the Greater Triangle page of the TBJ. Chicken Salad Chick is expanding. One of the hottest retail developments in the Halo County surrounding the Research Triangle is about to get a buzzy new tenant. Chicken Salad Chick, a growing quick service chain that specializes in a variety of chicken salads along with other foods, is opening its first location in Moore County on December 18th. The restaurant will be at 209 Carolina Green Parkway in the Morganton Park South Development in Southern Pines. Sitting between Morganton Road and U.S. 15501 near where Southern Pines borders Pinehurst and Aberdeen, Morganton Park South is a nearly 100-acre development that is attracting major retailers to the area, including the area's first Target store and BJ's Wholesale Club. Representatives of Chicken Salad Chick did not respond to requests seeking comment about how large the new store will be, how many employees it will have, and its seating capacity. The company was founded in 2008 in Auburn, Alabama. Stacy Brown started making wildly popular varieties of chicken salad in her Auburn home and selling to friends, but after a local health official warned her that she couldn't run a business from her kitchen, she opened a small restaurant in 2008 with the help of her husband, Kevin, and the concept exploded. The company is now owned by Brentwood Associates of Los Angeles. The franchise fee is $50,000, according to its website, and an owner must have a minimum net worth of $750,000. Chicken Salad Chick is expanding across the Southeast and Midwest, according to the chain's website. Chicken Salad Chick has 275 locations across 19 states and another 245 locations in development. Chicken Salad Chick is relatively new to the Triangle. The restaurant opened its first location at Cary at Waverly Place in 2020. In November 2023, Chicken Salad Chick opened a new restaurant in the Lake Boone Shopping Center in Raleigh. In Chatham County, Disney is still quiet on plans for Astoria. The Walt Disney Company made quite the splash toward the end of 2023 when one of its ventures, Story Living by Disney, announced it would build a high-end community in Chatham County. Since the announcement, the entertainment conglomerate has been quiet about its plans, but work could start to heat up in 2025. Around this time last year, Disney revealed that its second residential community nationwide, Astoria, would be part of Chatham Park, the enormous planned development transforming the Pittsburgh area. The community will cover 1,500 acres and include more than 4,000 residential units with a mix of multifamily and single-family homes. Home prices at Astoria and Chatham Park are expected to be in line with the local market, but plans are still largely under wraps, even to those heavily involved with Chatham Park. It's so secret, Bubba Rawl, co-founder of Preston Development and one of the masterminds of Chatham Park, said in August. Vanessa Jenkins, executive vice president of Preston Development, said in November that Disney is planning to break ground on the development in the first quarter of next year, and that the first homes will be available for sale in 2027. In Vance County, a textile supplier is to axe more than 100 workers. A major textile supplier is shutting down its plant in a small North Carolina town, which will result in the elimination of more than 100 workers. California-based Keyco submitted a Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Act, that's WARN, filing December 4th with the North Carolina Department of Commerce to say that its facility located at 100 Comfort Drive in the Vance County city of Henderson is in the process of closing. The first employee terminations are due to this closing are expected to occur on or about February 3rd, 2025. Rosa Ruiz, an executive vice president of human resources for the company, said in a letter. She added that it's possible that customer demands may require that many employees remain with the company beyond a 14-day layoff period starting on February 3rd. If that is the case, we will notify you about the extensions as soon as we can, she said. The planned action will eventually result in the permanent closure of the entire plant. In Duplin County, Wallace Lands Investment from a Chinese firm. A small town in eastern North Carolina is receiving a multi-million dollar investment that will create dozens of jobs. NextGen Cabinets, Inc., a subsidiary of Chinese kitchen and bathroom furniture manufacturer Hansor International Limited, announced recently that it will invest more than $6.7 million to establish an assembly and manufacturing facility in Wallace, a town in Duplin County. The investment will create 42 jobs, and the annual wage for the new jobs will be $50,462. The company will occupy a 150,000-square-foot facility. We look forward to long-term growth as we become part of the community, said Tom Boyda, NextGen Cabinets' chief operating officer. Our cover story this week is from the Project Life series about executive health and worker wellness in the Triangle. Connie Gentry is the writer of this story, and the headline is Practical Tools for an Unseen Threat. Half the people who are developing glaucoma, which causes vision loss and can lead to blindness, don't even know they need to be seeking treatment. That's because symptoms don't surface in the early stages of the disease when it's in the prime time to prevent progression. Anyone over the age of 60, especially Hispanics and Latinos, are at a higher risk of developing glaucoma, according to the National Eye Institute. And for the black population, the risk of glaucoma is higher for anyone over age 40. Age-related eye diseases, including cataracts, diabetic retinopathy, macular degeneration, and glaucoma, are the leading causes of impaired vision and blindness in the U.S., according to the Centers for Disease Control. More than 4 million Americans have retinopathy, the CDC reports, and 3 million have glaucoma. By the age of 80, most people either have cataracts or have had cataract surgery, according to the NEI. The key to preserving vision is to detect and treat eye diseases as early as possible, which can be problematic if people don't get an eye exam until they experience symptoms. Dr. Julia Rosdahl, a glaucoma specialist at the Duke Eye Center and associate professor of ophthalmology, said now is the perfect time of year to be discussing eye disease because people are making their lists for the new year, and anyone behind an eye exam should schedule a dilated eye exam as soon as possible. Early diagnosis is key so that we find folks at the earliest stages and start treatment. Most people who are under treatment for glaucoma don't go completely blind, Rosdahl said. How quickly someone might lose vision if left untreated varies. Some cases of glaucoma are incredibly aggressive and people lose vision in a matter of months, but typically it is a slowly progressing disease. Often when someone has a lot of risk factors, they are monitored as a glaucoma suspect, and Rosdahl recommends annual tracking and glaucoma testing. Age-related macular degeneration also requires a dilated eye exam to be diagnosed, and it's even more prevalent. 11 million people in the U.S. have AMD, according to the NEI, and people over age 55 and who are Caucasian are at a higher risk. Macular degeneration and glaucoma do run in families, so risk factors include genetic components plus environmental exposures, Rosdahl said, stressing again that the holidays present a perfect opportunity to address these. Take advantage of your holiday gatherings by getting to know your family history, all your blood relatives, parents, grandparents, siblings, aunts, uncles. Find out anyone who had eye disease, and safety glasses and sunglasses make great stocking stuffers. Since glaucoma and macular degeneration are both medical conditions, they're covered by health insurance, and those particular eye exams are covered by Medicaid and Medicare. Eye exams for glasses and routine eye care are typically covered by a vision plan. If you are higher risk, it might mean starting eye exams in your 40s, and if you're lower risk with no family history and you've had normal eye exams in the past, then maybe you could have exams every couple of years, but certainly once you're in your 50s and 60s, you're going to want to have exams regularly, she advised. This year, the Duke Eye Center performed over 17,000 surgeries and has treated more than 237,300 patients. It's ranked among the top 10 ophthalmology hospitals in the country by U.S. News & World Report, and is ranked 7th nationally in funding from the National Institutes of Health for Ophthalmology. In addition to the more than $12 million received in federal funding, Duke received over $13 million in non-federal grants from Research to Prevent Blindness, Foundation Fighting Blindness, Bright Focus Foundation, and other organizations. Scientists at the Eye Center are trying to understand these diseases at their cellular and molecular level, both to better understand them and to potentially lead to treatments in the future, Rosdahl said. Some of the glaucoma researchers are looking at the role of the immune system relative to glaucoma, she noted, while other scientists are working to better understand the components of drusen, that's D-R-U-S-E-N, which are the tiny deposits under the retina that lead to macular degeneration. What patients want to know about are the treatments that are happening both in macular degeneration and glaucoma, Rostall said. New treatments for the dry form of macular degeneration can help slow down and prevent geographic atrophy, which is such an important problem to address, and it's wonderful to have new options for those patients that previously just had vitamins as options. The new options administered as injections are not suitable for everyone with dry AMD, but Rostall is bullish on the future. I think it's the tip of the iceberg for what's coming for these patients. For glaucoma, she says, there are new surgical techniques that are being developed as well as new treatments, including two new classes of glaucoma medications that came out in 2020. Latanoprostene Bunod, a nitric oxide donating prostaglandin analog, and Nitarsidil, a Rokinase inhibitor. A lot of the things that we do for the early stage glaucoma or mild to moderate glaucoma are surgical procedures that would be done with cataract surgery. MIGs, minimally invasive glaucoma surgery, is what we call them, and examples would be like the iStent or the Hydrus microstent, Rostall said. Both of these MIG devices are implanted into the drain of the eye during cataract surgery and help decrease the need for eye drops to treat glaucoma. There are also more injectable medications emerging, where a little pellet of medication is injected in the front part of the eye, and it just sits there and clots over months, she explained. These are some exciting advances, but for both diseases, we have researchers working on treatments to bring back vision. That's kind of our next frontier. We don't have that capability yet, but it's what we really need. Artificial intelligence presents another area of potential innovation, said Rostall, along with Dr. Adelie Thompson, Vice Chair of Learning Health Systems in the Department of Surgical Ophthalmology at Atrium Health in Wake Forest Baptist, discussed opportunities to use AI as a diagnostic tool for various eye diseases in a recent webcast of the Glaucoma Chats series hosted by the Bright Focus Foundation. AI could help support us in caring for patients, either by making our care more efficient or by expanding access to care, Thompson said during the program. For instance, the IDX-DR system is an autonomous AI system that screens for diabetic retinopathy and is designed to be used in a primary care setting. Lots of people live in areas where they don't have an ophthalmologist for like 100 miles, Thompson said. I would really love to see glaucoma screening in non-ophthalmic settings become a reality, and I think AI could get us there. Project Life exists to shed light on executive health and worker wellness. The series includes regular articles on worker stress, work anxiety, depression, and addiction-related issues that creep into the workplace, and personality features from executives that are on the forefront of this fight for better health in our workplaces. We have a second Project Life article this week related to healthcare, so I'll read that one as well. This is written by Dr. Christopher Kelly. Artificial intelligence is already an essential part of healthcare. Healthcare is uniquely well-suited to AI-driven disruption because of its immense data trail, complex decision-making, and heavy administrative burden. The potential long-term impacts of AI on the discovery and delivery of medical therapies is difficult to overstate. Although the future holds tremendous promise, few realize that AI has already become an essential partner to physicians. As a cardiologist at UNC Rex, I am currently using AI every day to streamline my clinical practice. So far, most AI applications in healthcare have targeted the clerical burden that consumes on average 15 hours of a physician's week and nearly one quarter of medical costs. A prominent early innovation has been automatic creation of clinical documentation after each patient visit. A physician must write a note summarizing the discussion, findings, and treatment plan. Some physicians try to save time by drafting notes during visits, but this distracts their attention from patients and can affect the quality of care. If your doctor types and frequently looks at a screen during your visits, then you have some experience with this problem. Companies such as Microsoft, Abridge, and Nabla now offer AI-powered products to streamline the creation of these notes while freeing doctors from their keyboards. These tools listen to patient visits during a secure HIPAA-compliant app on the physician's phone, and then generate comprehensive clinical notes within seconds. They can also produce patient-friendly visit summaries in lay terms that highlight key points in the treatment plan. I now use these documentation tools during every patient encounter, and they have transformed my practice, allowing me to focus more fully on my patients without the distraction of note-taking. I've also reclaimed an hour of time at home each night. AI has also streamlined my online interactions with patients. Most of my patients use UNC's web-based portal known as Epic My Chart to send me messages ranging from simple refill requests to detailed inquiries about test results. Though these messages are often straightforward and my nursing colleagues handle many of them, the volume can become overwhelming. Another emerging role for AI is in the interpretation of medical tests, particularly imaging studies such as CT scans. Products like RAD AI are already widely used by radiologists to convert brief dictations into comprehensive guideline-based reports. Companies such as ADOC and Viz AI have created tools that go further, using AI to automatically analyze images and generate draft interpretations. These platforms can also alert physicians to urgent findings as soon as a scan is completed. For example, notifying a radiologist that a brain scan was just performed that shows signs of acute stroke and should therefore be read immediately. As a cardiologist, I frequently order cardiac CT scans, which assess the heart for plaques that can cause chest pain and lead to heart attacks. Companies such as Clearly and HeartFlow have created comprehensive AI-based platforms that can automatically analyze such scans to quantify the total amount of plaque and characterize each plaque as high or low risk, providing a level of granular detail that cannot be practically achieved by human readers alone. These innovations significantly enhance my ability to predict cardiovascular risk. Although the tools described so far enhance the efficiency of current systems, the next major breakthroughs will come from AI systems that guide diagnosis and management. Currently, AI systems have only a superficial exchange of information with EHRs and therefore have limited insight into each patient's overall clinical picture. In the coming years, AI models will undoubtedly have broader access to EHR data, including lab results, imaging studies, and prior clinical assessments. This deeper integration will allow AI to provide more comprehensive insights, guiding physicians toward more accurate diagnoses and individualized treatment plans. The ongoing success of AI in healthcare hinges on several key factors. First, patients must get complete transparency regarding the presence or use of AI-generated information. Currently, physicians are expected to review and approve all AI-generated text before it reaches patients, retaining full liability for any errors. This oversight is critical, as present-day AI models are prone to hallucinations in which fabricated or incorrect information is presented as credible. Second, AI models used in healthcare must be insulated from commercial influence. The public's trust in AI will be quickly and perhaps irrevocably broken if it's perceived as biased towards specific treatments based on financial interest. Finally, technology companies must respect and remain compliant with the strict privacy laws governing the use of individual healthcare data. Patients must feel secure that their information is being kept confidential, even when AI models are used for processing and interpretation. I'm very optimistic about the potential for AI to improve both patient outcomes and the healthcare experience. I'm already using AI-based tools on a regular basis, and I believe their impact will be felt broadly and rapidly. Dr. Christopher Kelly is chairman of cardiology at UNC Rex Hospital in Raleigh, and the board president at the American Heart Association for the Triangle Region. We have time for a few other articles here. Stadium naming rights come with big price tags. Carter Finley Stadium may be getting a new name as the PAC eyes fresh revenue streams. NC State University's openness to renaming Carter Finley Stadium presents an opportunity that may be tough to pass up. Just ask Coastal Federal Credit Union, which gave its name to the former Walnut Creek Amphitheater, or Lenovo, whose branding recently replaced that at PNC at the arena now known as the Lenovo Center. While it's too early to see the impact of Lenovo Center, a 10-year, $60 million sponsorship deal, Coastal has seen its name recognition shoot up since its partnership with Live Nation for the music venue. When Coastal inked the deal in 2016, the credit union had $2.5 billion in assets and 212,000 members. As of last month, that had swelled to nearly $5.5 billion and more than 336,000 members. T.J. Wyman, now Chief Digital Services Officer at Coastal, was executive over the deal at the time and says the strategy has been effective. Brand studies in the pre-Music Park days had results in the low teens. The last one we did, our score was in the high 20s, close to 30, which would put Coastal on par with some of the regional and national banks in our market, he said. It's unclear what kind of companies, international sports and entertainment, the firm NC State has tapped to help it find a partner for the stadium is seeking, but historically ISF has primarily secured financial institutions for those roles, mostly credit unions. For example, DATCU, which is Denton Area Teachers Credit Union, partnered with the University of North Texas on DATQ Stadium with the help of ISC. Washington State University teamed up with GISA Credit Union on GISA Field. Allegacy Federal Credit Union and Wake Forest University's partnership resulted in Allegacy Federal Credit Union Stadium in Winston-Salem, and the University of California, Davis, teamed up with the University Credit Union on University Credit Union Center. It can be a long process. Kansas State University partnered with ISE to secure a naming rights partner for its Bramlage Coliseum back in July 2023. No naming rights partner has yet been announced. For NC State Athletics, it's done these kind of deals before. In 2022, the former Vaughn Towers at Carter Finley were renamed to Town Bank Center in recognition of a $5 million gift. An official with Town Bank didn't provide comment on the future of Carter Finley. The football stadium opened in 1966, replacing Riddick Stadium on campus. It was named Carter Stadium in honor of NC State alumni and donors Wilbert J. Nick Carter and Harry C. Carter. The name Albert E. Finley, another major donor to NC State, was added in 1979. Last month, Athletics Director Boo Corrigan said the school had the blessing of both families to change the name. St. Augustine College faces new threat to its accreditation. St. Augustine's University in Raleigh is once again facing a bleak outlook. The board that governs the school's accrediting agency has decided to remove St. Augustine's from its membership for the second time in the past 2 years. The college says it will appeal the decision. St. Augustine's will maintain its accreditation during the appeal process. Without accreditation, a university is not eligible to receive federal funds, and its students are unable to receive federal student aid from the U.S. Department of Education. The Board of Trustees of the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools Commission on Colleges voted during its recent annual meeting to remove the historically black school from its membership due to issues related to its finances. The college has struggled financially for years, leading to millions in unpaid taxes and lawsuits from vendors for unpaid work. The college, now with just a few hundred students, says it has taken various steps to improve its financial standing and keep its accreditation. The accrediting agency was not able to consider some of the steps the college has taken in recent weeks, but St. Augustine's will be able to provide that information during the appeal process. This week's executive voice focuses on Caroline Rigsby. She keeps saying yes and flourishing. Lauren Onosorge is the writer of this story. For Triangle native and longtime banker Caroline Rigsby, it has been a decades-long career of saying yes. Rigsby, a Chapel Hill-based area manager for Pinnacle Financial Partners, has been around the block from teller to commercial banker, and she'd like to see more women bankers at the top. Rigsby said the key to getting more women in banking is mentorship. She said it needs to start earlier with female leaders talking to young people. It's just getting the word out here about the financial industry and how much fun it is. It will make a big difference, she said. This wasn't really what I thought I'd do, but I can't imagine doing anything else. Rigsby started her career as a part-time teller and just kept moving. I had about every job you can have in a financial institution. That is people-facing, she said. Rigsby was at the old Blue Wachovia working as a customer service rep, and she just kept saying yes. Rigsby spent much of her career at PNC and its Triangle predecessor, RBC Bank. She became a manager, a business banker, and a commercial banker. She worked as a specialist in the healthcare vertical, and she joined Pinnacle in 2018 as an area manager. It's an unexpected journey for Rigsby, who originally wanted to be a teacher. She even took a break from banking, teaching pre-K for a year. But a divorce shifted her financial situation. I needed to go back to work full-time, so I called Wachovia and said, I need to come back to work now, Rigsby said. Banking was more lucrative and became addictive. Her secret sauce was the relationships she was able to build one client at a time. But it was also the relationship she built at the bank itself. It was a former Centura colleague, Mark Carlton, now regional president for Pinnacle, who recruited Rigsby for her current role. She has an edge few have, and that's a lifetime in Chapel Hill. Rigsby was born in the old Watts Hospital in Durham. Her father was in sales, so she attended school in multiple states before returning to Chapel Hill as a junior in high school. My dad moved us around a lot, and I think that's why I stayed put, she said. Rigsby loved banking, but for some time her passion was kids. She had, after all, wanted to be a school teacher. So she took a job at Orange United Methodist Preschool, a Mother's Morning Out program. Rigsby credits good leadership, and it's what she tries to bring to her reports at the bank. Instead of just talking about an employee's job, it's open conversations. What are their desires, she said. Good leaders create good leaders, and it starts with transparency, open conversations about where your reports see themselves, and then get real discussions on how to get them there. Plans for Raleigh Tower are now in doubt. The third tower in the Block 83 development in downtown Raleigh might not happen, as the property is now up for sale. Four parcels at the corner of South Boylan Avenue and West Morgan Street on the edge of Glenwood South are being marketed by JLL. The site has no listing price. It had been earmarked for the third phase of development for Block 83. The site is owned by Baltimore-based Heritage Properties, which developed and sold the first two towers of Block 83. Plans for the property showed an 18-story tower with office space and retail space, but those plans date to 2021 and are still in the site review process with the city. The last update was a plan review that didn't pass in April 2022. No further action or filings have been made since, but the plans haven't been withdrawn. Representatives with Heritage did not comment when reached by Triangle Business Journal. Totaling 1.47 acres, the available site is at 615 West Morgan Street, 117 South Boylan Avenue, and 610 and 612 West Hargett Street. The combined assessed value is about $9.5 million. The properties are zoned downtown mixed use, with the parcel directly across from Block 83 zoned for up to 20 stories, and the other zoned for up to 7 stories. There's a vacant retail building at 615 West Morgan Street. Teddy Hobbs and Hunter Barron of JLL are representing the seller. Nearby, on the other side of Hillsborough Street from Block 83, the property holding the original char grill went on the market in September, indicating the 20-story tower plan for the site is no longer happening. Financial headwinds continue to squeeze the commercial real estate market, and developers are counting on more interest rate cuts in order to secure financing and get projects out of the ground. What Trump Tariffs Mean for North Carolina's Economy, by Lauren Onosorge. Talk of new tariffs could have an impact in North Carolina, where three countries targeted by the incoming Trump administration, China, Mexico, and Canada, are major trading partners. Manufacturing entrepreneur Harry Smith, CEO of Rise Capital, said tariffs could be a net positive for North Carolina companies. If you take a look at all the cheap imports that are flooding into the country, it's very difficult for a lot of the American companies to compete, Smith said. A lot of the foreign countries do not hold their manufacturing to the standards we have here in America, and they also don't try to create the dynamics we create for our employees here in America. He sees tariffs as leveling the playing field for U.S. companies, which invest in healthy atmospherics and benefits like 401ks for their employees. Smith believes that in the long run, more tariffs could lead to job creation in manufacturing-rich states like North Carolina. I think what you're going to do is force your manufacturers to go back with and create those supply chains within our borders, he said. There's nothing made or imported that we can't make quick, smart, or fast. Through September of this year, North Carolina imported $65 billion in goods, according to the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. The top five countries with imports into North Carolina were Mexico, Ireland, China, Germany, and the Netherlands. The top five products imported into the state were pharmaceutical products, industrial machinery, electrical machinery, vehicles and parts, and organic chemicals. And they include supplies manufacturers may be counting on. China alone imported more than $5.3 billion in goods, including more than $1.7 million in industrial machinery, including computers. Mexico, China, and Canada's imports through September, according to EDPNC, Mexico, $8.4 billion, China, $5.3 billion, and Canada, $3.6 billion. Alfredo Romero, an economist and professor at NC Agricultural and Technical State University in Greensboro, said that for companies dependent on foreign components, there could be a painful transition. If you impose tariffs across the board, their cost of input is going to increase, he said. They might be able to pass those additional costs to consumers, but they might not. Romero predicts some squeezed profit margins, particularly in areas such as textiles and agriculture, but agrees it could also result in onshoring. When China tariffs increased in 2018, some companies relocated facilities to countries outside of China. Some opted for nearshoring, moving facilities to Mexico and Canada. But broader tariffs could force some companies to consider moving operations in their supply chains to the U.S. $8.4 billion, that's the total value of imports from Mexico to North Carolina this year through September. Another big number, $60 million. That's the cost of Lenovo's 10-year deal to be the title sponsor for Raleigh's hockey and basketball arena. We've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.